Comedy Fix, everybody. I'm Chris Alvarado, always here with my two best buds, Jamie Parkinen and my baby boy, Sam Miller. 2 weeks ago, we talked about trios. Last week was duos. So this week is solo improv. And this is somebody who I respect, have seen a lot in my life, not a lot lately, I would say. Just, you know, life has happened, but has always been around, is making noise in the improv scene since I've known her. Welcome, Monica Smith, everybody. Hi, Monica.
Hello, hello. Thank you again for having me.
Of course. I mean, we've been discussing lately what the ideal improv team number would be, the number of players on a team. A lot of us like duos. Some of us don't like trios. Four feels wonky. Five feels good. But we haven't spoken a lot about the solo improviser. Really quick, I just want to say, years ago, I did a show called Alvarado Alone at I.O. Everybody from my acting class came to that. Terrible improv, but like cool to be on stage alone. I did not enjoy it, or maybe I didn't do it well. Monica, how'd you even find this? How'd you stumble into this?
I mean, I listened to some of your podcasts. So I heard how some of you do not like three, which I thought was funny. How we all have like strong opinions about all, like what feels right or who's hanging on the back line. Honestly, I've been doing improv so long, I wanted to just keep challenging myself. I wanted to keep finding, how do I keep finding a new joy in this art form in a new way? And I felt like I've been grateful to have the opportunity to perform at a lot of places, play with a lot of different types of people, right? Do most forms. So it was just that, how can I keep moving this forward? What can I find new? And I just started thinking about doing it. I had a two-person team that I was with for 8-10 years called Mick Smith with Kevin McGann. And yeah, I just something, I was like, what else? And then I tried solo.
It's really cool. I mean, when I started looking at possibly doing a solo show, you were one of the first people that people were like, have you seen Monica? And it was really cool when I saw your performance because, you know, there are a lot of different ways to approach the one person show, right? I'm in Philadelphia. I saw a solo show from our podcast guest, Nick Gillette, previously. It's like rhyming storytelling to the audience. It's very like presentational to the audience, right? Some people might do a long mono scene with like an inanimate object, right? And they're kind of playing one character. And I remember in the show of yours that I saw, you played multiple characters, and that was really cool to kind of see. Can you maybe talk about like what you are trying to do with your sort of solo show and how you came to that version of the show, maybe?
Yeah, I think to start, I wanted to do a solo Harold. I don't know. Yeah. I think we can pull that apart later. So I didn't know how to get started. I kept trying to get started. And then I kind of said, fuck it. And I asked Ian Roberts, one of like the UCB four. I was like, hey, I want to do this. And at the time, he would do like improvised stand-up, essentially. He would do like indie shows and he would just talk to the audience for half an hour. And that was his all improvised conversation kind of thing. And he was like, sure, come to UCB. And like, I got there and he sat in the audience and was like, do it. And so I feel like I needed that fear to get it going. And so I started with the Herald, and then that was way too hard on my brain. And then it was the Pretty Flower, which I thought would be easier. Again, hard. And then it was also like slowly building my brain out to do that long a period of time. I knew I'd always play multiple characters because I like playing a bunch of characters. Now I'm in a place where it's a mono scene. I usually do about 8 people, or it's like one moment in time. And now I do tag runs, and my tag runs can sometimes be meta, can sometimes be character based. It's just trying to figure out what suits it best. But I like it. I like a moment in time, and I love playing multiple games of the scene. So I have all these characters who are different types, and I enjoy that aspect of it.
Yeah, that's really fun. I remember the show I saw, this was years ago, in the before times, but like you had a stoner teen guy character sort of a thing that was like very different from some of the other characters. And so like bringing that variety in there, I thought was very cool. I've heard of the solo Harold. I heard it's called like a Sybil by some people. And like, okay, some people have tried it in like New York markets or whatever. But it kind of makes sense to me for like a mono scene as being a very approachable format for a lot of people if they haven't done solo work before. Did I see correctly that you were teaching a solo class? Have you taught solo performance to
I
people?
haven't. I feel like I've had some people ask. I haven't made it a workshop yet, to be honest. Yeah.
I mean, you said you're neighbors with Will Hines, right? You can just shoot
I
him
know.
a
I'll just
just
knock
knock on
on.
his.
Hey, buddy.
Monica, what does a successful, or what are elements that to a successful solo improv show? What goes right? What headspace are you in? What kind of goals are you trying to achieve? Like when you walk off stage, I'm sure I can't even imagine actually the amount of brain power it takes to do that. But when you're done, I don't even know what I'm trying to ask. I just want to know when you're in, like, what feels good? I don't know what I'm asking. How do you know when it's a good show? Is it based on the audience reaction? Is it because you were in this zone? You were flashing in and out of characters. You weren't doing too much thinking, or there was a lot of thinking? I don't know.
I think when I first started doing it, I was like, ooh, I gotta get laughs, laughs, laughs. And like every line was a laugh. And you know what I mean? I work so hard. And I always have a story in it too. Like there's an arc, a narrative arc that occurs and something happens. I don't know. At some point, I was like, I gotta slow down and enjoy it more because I was so fast and just everything was like a line in a game line that I'd get off stage and I'd be tired. But also, I don't think that was the joy for me. So then I started living in the characters more and like taking my time to light that cigarette and do that object work and get laughs from the object work or get laughs from like, you know, when a character just turns and reacts to everyone else's chaos. So the absurdity happens around them and we all laugh at the voice of reason. I think I started embracing that more. So that brings me joy to like each character has a distinct game. So I always have a game to come back to. And then usually the scene, the main scene, has a game. So then we all have that we can play or multiple games, you know? So I think I like having all of those options. And then just I fuck with myself, which I've been doing a lot lately, which sounds like a weird sentence, I realize now. Like I'll be like, this guy always talks in rhyme. Like I will just do the thing I don't want to do to myself on stage, so I have to do it. I don't know if that's a smart move, but
I think that sounds like the best move yet. I mean, that's what we want to see, I think. Not that you're challenged. Well, maybe it is the challenge. I guess for me, when I envision the show, I kind of want to see you showing us your work. Like, I want to see the, I don't know if the word is clunkiness to it, because I understand you're a professional, but like, I guess I could see a way where you could overly rehearse this and streamline it, and that doesn't sound very satisfying to me. Where you fucking with yourself mid-show, mid-character, in the moment sounds really, really fun. That sounds great.
I think the tags, I only just added the tags the last like 6 or 8 months, maybe. Because if I made a mistake, I want to tag and make fun of me for doing that or make fun of me for not knowing a reference. So then it became, so it started getting meta, but also it's like, you all know this is only my brain. So you're seeing my references and my version of what I know about a subject. So if I don't know sports and I gift myself, this guy's a big football player. I'm a little fucked to reference a lot of football stuff. So then I'll call it out, tag it, and I don't know. Yeah, I do think I don't know if the audience likes it more, but it makes me feel like you have a better idea of what's happening.
Are there certain things that you found in solo performances that don't translate to solo performances that work in groups or in duos, but that just doesn't really translate well to solo? Have you found anything like that?
I mean, definitely the group scene aspect of like, hey, everybody get in here. We all stand in a line. One person's got a magic marker, not solo, because you just take a step to the right and play different types. It definitely, at least for me, it needs a lot more object work and physicality. And I think you need to engage the audience aesthetically a little bit more. With a two-person, we could probably get away with standing in one spot, even though we should be doing more object work. But I think with the solo, I find I most definitely need to get them to like see all that. So I don't know if that translates. Because your question was like, what translates well into it,
or not?
Yeah, no, I think you've asked it. I also am curious about the opposite. Is there anything that doing solo work unlocks that you can't really do in duo or larger groups?
Yeah, I think it's a, I don't want to say it's fear, but it is like that, like, you guys have my back. I know if I jumped on stage, I played with you, Chris, once. I know you got me and you will save me. And there is some kind of safety in that, right? And joy of like, I can explore and I know my team will make sure it works. Alone, I'm like, fuck, I'll make it work. It's in that, so in that sense, like there are aspects like if I only did solo, I don't think I'd be a happy person. Like I need the team. I need the joy of playing with people. This isn't as much play. It is in the moment, but it's also work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for Monica, you know what's interesting is I was thinking about when I did my show, which is really what this podcast is about, my experience with solo. I remember I was in a pretty dark place in my life, just generally. And like, even like my show poster was like me, like smoking a cigarette, which I don't smoke anymore, but I miss it. And it's like Alvarado alone, like the alliteration there, that was like hip. And I remember doing it because I wanted to satisfy a need that wasn't being satisfied with the team, but it was in a selfish kind of dark way. Like I want to do the material that I want to fucking do. And I want to like do it this way and that way. And I want it to be dark and purposefully not funny. Granted, in hindsight, I don't love that, but I'm just being honest. That's where my need came from, where I was like, I keep telling my teammates I want to do it this way, or even this two-person team is not really hitting it the way I want to hit. So I'll just remove everybody and I'll just be like the star and like do it the way I want to do it. It wasn't really the great way to approach it, but that's honestly how I got there. Was there any part of you that was like, I kind of wanted to just shine? Like, I kind of just want to like, just be a fucking gangster alone and just shine for a moment.
I'm sure, like, if I'm candid, I'm sure there's ego. So sometimes I feel like I shine better with people because they're all lifting me, you know, they're helping the spotlight to have that moment on me. I think I really got into it because we're all improv nerds. I love the art of improv, and I've been teaching so long that it's like, what do I find joyous about it? How are we still doing something new with improv? And I remember when like UCB opened up the Sunset location, at one point Besser was like, this is where we can experiment, that's background dog flutter, where we could experiment more with like, what is improv gonna be? And I was like, yeah, how can we keep moving forward? Where can we take improv next? So I know, I'd be lying if I said there was no ego, but I think I also wanted to be like, what can I do? How can I play more? What can I expand on? And then also the idea of one brain, because you know, every time you play with a different person, it's gonna go a different direction. But with just my brain, it's like, you're seeing sides of me I may not be aware I'm showing.
This is off topic of solos, but I'm curious, you know, when you had that conversation or Besser was talking about what's next in improv, when did Sunset open up? Like 2013, 14-ish? I don't know. But around that time, and he was talking about what's next in improv, what was next for improv, you know, 10 years ago?
I don't know. I remember it wasn't like him and I having a solo conversation. we have spoken, but I mean, it was him to like the community or whatever saying what he wanted the space to be, because there was like the Sunset and then there was the Inner Sanctum. And that was where like indie teams were going. And he was trying to be like, take risks, do what I guess they did in New York when they first started. So back then, I think clowning, you know what I mean, was still finding its voice because it's in a different place now than it was then, right? I think mime work is growing. I don't know. So I feel like we were in that moment of like, what will improv be? Like, yeah. Just sort of like, and Harold's, I don't think we look at Harold's now the same way we did then. Harold's was like the epitome of improv for some reason back then. And I think now we're all acknowledging that's a form and it's fundamental in teaching a lot of craft skills, but there are other options.
Have you spent any time in the clown world, Monica, training or performing? Or
only a little bit. Chad has been lovely and let me play a little bit. And I've taken a couple classes. I used to be the AD at Nerdist. And so we had I put up clown there. So because of that, I got to take some clown. I like it a lot. I like the meta aspect of it. You know, when an audience groans, it's still a reaction. So I do understand that, and I enjoy that aspect of it. Have you guys all taken clown?
Oh, we are deep in it, Monica. Deep. I just had breakfast this morning. I'm going to drop some names with Craig Kukowski, Kevin Pollak, and Mark Gagliardi. And I started telling them about my clown experience. I went off on like a 30-minute caffeine-fueled just monologue about how it's changing my life. So yes, and all of us, Sam and Jamie as well, they're very much into it.
Yeah. I like it. The way, oh, I'm so sorry, Sam.
No, go ahead.
Just the idea of like, you know, the show where Chad has you like go and he's like, that's not working, try something else, keep pushing. There's something fun in that of like pushing instead of go, ah, this isn't working, I know what will work. No, I'm going to commit even harder. It's like when you see someone commit to a bad bit and then it gets good. I feel like clown does a bit of that of like, no, sit in it. Why isn't it working? How are they feeling? How can you bring them back?
Yeah, I love that.
From my experience of it.
No, agreed.
I mean, I think the solo improv show does lean towards, you know, as you kind of talked about earlier, like the meta, like there is one person in their relationship to the audience. And so I do think, you know, a lot of that, like peeking behind the mask of character to show the performer a little bit, right? You show yourself, setting yourself up for failure in really fun ways. I mean, I think that's a very clownish idea. And it seems like that's more accessible in a solo show. I don't know. Than maybe in an ensemble or like, yeah, I don't know. Meta has like a very weird reputation with ensembles. Like some coaches really do not want you to break this like fictional world, but when you're up there by yourself, I feel like we know you're one person in a room playing multiple characters, right? Like we're not fooling anyone. So it's just a little bit more on the surface, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think meta was like anti-improv almost for a bit. Some people were really against it, and it's like, I think there's no rules in improv except yes anding. Like, let just like go in the audience. You know what I mean? Like do those things that like go behind stage and yeah, like all those choices that like at some point I'm sure weren't allowed. And it's like, yeah, we have to break the rule to keep finding it. It's like do whatever the scene is calling you to do and is getting a reaction from the audience.
Yeah. Did you ever think about doing a scripted solo show, or do you ever like look at scripted solo shows to get some inspiration, or you're really kind of coming from like improv and how far you can push yourself and how far you can kind of push your own show?
I do want to do a scripted show. I'm trying to write one right now, but it's going to be like my personal life in characters, right? So that's going to be its own separate type of vibe. This, I love playing character. I love playing multiple characters. I love creating a world, right? I love that you can get absurdity and from a place like start really grounded and then like have this chaos and silliness. I don't know. I'm really loving it. I want it to become this bigger thing. I have this version of it I'd like to put up, but it's hard to get this much stage time with it. But I want to do where like you, this might be ego ridden, Chris, you tell me, but like, I want to do one set where it's for you. Because my solo show is I follow the laughs. I follow what you guys like. If you're not liking a character, he's probably not going to get as much stage time. And then the second half is I wear earphones and I do me. And I only follow what my brain enjoys. Because I think that would be the true form of solo improv, is I'm not even listening to the audience.
That sparks me for sure. That's what I'm talking about. That's the shit I want to watch. That's that shit I do like. Really, I love that idea. I love that idea, Monica. And just in general, and I don't know how to word this, whatever, but I feel like your improv career trajectory, even just peripherally, we don't spend a lot of time together, but you know, some social media stuff or just friends in common, I feel like your path has been kind of interesting. I'm only mentioning that because I love that idea so much. And I feel like you've always been like one or two clicks to the left or to the right of like what like the thing was, don't get me wrong, you're obviously intertwined with the hot shot players and stuff, and you yourself are a hot shot player, and I don't mean that with any sarcasm. But am I right in saying you mentioned your two-person show with, what's his name? I love him so much.
Kevin McGeehan.
Kevin. I mean, even that, he's a particular flavor and taste, and I respect him so much. Have you always kind of been dialed into trying to do what you love more than doing what you think you should be doing, like, professionally? I mean, we're from the same generation, and there's the UCB ideas of what could pop from there. I don't know. You've been doing this for a long time, and like I said, I've always thought your road was like was very interesting, because it felt like, again, like a click or two off. But I don't mean that in any negative way. Obviously, I felt like you were doing what you wanted to do, was my point. And would you agree with that?
Maybe. I mean, I just feel like I was never. I don't think I've ever been a cool kid. When I was at Second City, I wasn't the coolest ones there. It used to be, I'm not the coolest ones there. Like, you know what I mean? I've just never been that person. I've been on a ton of teams with a ton of different people, and I'm very grateful for that opportunity. I never had that one team that shined and just heyday, you know what I mean, that team that just was like, everyone knows who this team is, they can be around for years. I've never had that. I've had a bunch of different ones.
I don't know
if that's me or not, but
gotcha. That's a good point. I mean, I'm currently looking at your Instagram right now, and I'm looking at your tagged photos. It's the coolest kids who are doing it right now, in my opinion. I mean, it's. I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying, and I know you know that I know. It seems to me that you're in a really fun place right now, with a lot of cool opportunities to play with a lot of cool people. And I wonder if it feels. I don't even know what I'm asking. I don't know what I'm asking exactly, but I hear you, that you weren't on that team. But as I look here, you're doing all the coolest shows in the city right now, or you know.
I think it's been just such a long time. I know a bunch of Second City people. I know a bunch of IO people, UCB, right? So now I've played at all these places, and I've created all these relationships, and I think I'm my best improviser. If you saw, like, even you seen my solo show a couple of years ago, I would be like, ooh, no, watch it now. You know what I mean? I'm my strongest version of me. So I wonder if that helps. And I didn't mean I'm just like not a cool kid in the sense of just, maybe that's it. It's just making weirder choices, or, you know, always I do play Second City. Like, you get it. That Second City style is a little different, and the UCB style is a little different. And like, I like all of those people who I think trained at multiple theaters, sometimes you see them play in a way, you know what I mean? Not the one classic way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, yeah. For sure. Also, I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to bring up anything weird. All I'm trying to say is, like, when you say something like wearing the headphones on a show, I go like, fuck yeah, that sounds great. And I feel like you've done really great work this whole time, even if it wasn't on the number one team. I'm gonna stop talking about that stuff now. There's a compliment in there somewhere, Monica.
Somewhere. I am curious though, because I think part of the attraction of solo improv, right, is like, it's just you. Like, all the logistics, all the personality conflicts, like all that stuff. I mean, you can have personality conflicts with yourself, I guess. We all do in our own way. But I'm kind of curious, like, what is your rehearsal process like? What's your like prep? Like, do you have a coach? Do you do some stuff by yourself? Do you like come up with your own philosophy, kind of blending these different styles that you've studied? How do you kind of approach it?
I met with Ian a couple times, and this is now like 6 years ago. And I remember his biggest note was, all your men, you play like this, which I did every time I played a man, like one hand was like covering my crotch and my like voice deepened and my legs widened. That was it. So that note stuck. I started taping myself and giving myself notes just in my apartment by myself, and then seeing what worked and just practicing alone and recording it and then listening back and being like, what worked? And then especially like differentiating the characters, because when I play, say one line and then I run to the next character and say theirs, how am I holding my body different? How am I differentiating this character's tone of voice, their cadence, the accent, whatever choice I make? So it was really like working on all of those little minutiae, which is also why I kept switching what form to do. I thought Pretty Flower would be it. Like, I honestly thought that'd be fun because it'd just say like tag run back, but it is like you're planning. It's improv, but you're thinking ahead of the next line. You know what I mean? Like, there's still like, because you're improvising for all the different points of view. So I found, yeah, the practice helps a lot.
That's cool.
And
Is
getting it up
there,
on stage.
I don't even know if I like this question, but is there something that is smaller than solo improv? Is there a way to have a half person show, or like, can we, is there something beyond, is it really solo improv is like the last version, or is there like you call in and it just the whole show is on a cell phone or something? I don't know. Do you ever think about that? Like, what's next? You say you like to challenge yourself. How would you challenge yourself beyond the solo show?
That's what I thought. Like, the most solo you could be is the audience doesn't matter.
I agree with
As
that.
I keep, that's why I was like, I think to me, that's the, that would be like, how do I even take you guys out of it? And now it is just me alone, and you get to see, because every, just my brain and what it decides is funny. Because it's also like, you think what is funny is dependent on what you laugh at. During the pandemic, I put up one solo show on Zoom, because you know we still needed to do improv, so I used to do Zoom shows all the time. And I did one solo show, and I couldn't hear the audience, and it fucked with me, because I was just like, I'm alone in my home for months with a dog, and I don't know if what I think is funny anymore is normal to most
Yeah.
people.
I mean, is there like, I guess, yeah, is there an improv show where it's just your dog? Or like, is it where it's just
Yeah.
like it's less than Monica? Somehow it is not Monica. I agree that, you know, the audience really is oftentimes another character or another entity in the show. So to remove them, I love that. But yeah, even beyond that, what is even, I don't know. I don't even know what the question is, but I'm just
Remove
curious.
me and just do like the bat, just do it in the dark. But then again, now we're just hitting radio. Then it's just a podcast. Not just a podcast. You know what I mean? It's like one solo.
I don't even know, but yeah, like, could your dog do an improv show? Or
Probably he's sat in so many at this point as an
yeah,
audience member.
how many Zooms has he been a part of, and how
That's what I
many
mean. You know,
classes?
over the pandemic or like sleeping at a chair next to me, he's seen a lot of improv at this point. I see what you're saying of like what's next, because I've had conversations with people who are like, what else can you do? And it's like, perform with someone who doesn't do improv. And like, I did that for a bit, and that was super fun and hard. And you know what I mean? Like, it worked a muscle, but I don't know what the next step would be. I think that's what, I don't know if that's why clowning exists and all these different forms exist. Or right now, people are getting more into organic because we got so premise and so hard based on that that we forgot like improv is just. How do I react to you in this moment? Not how do I react to you in this moment based on what you said in a monologue 2 minutes ago.
Monica, our last guests were are a duo called Dock of the Bay, and I remember telling somebody, our friend Liam, like, "Oh, they're revolutionizing what we're doing." And then when he just said it back to me, it was just organic. It was just I was like so like, "Whoa, what is this new form?" And it was just them being together, heightening through that and landing somewhere else. Not just, but you know what I mean? Like, oh, okay, the organic felt all of a sudden like fresh again. Or for such a long time, it was like, listen to how smart I can be, or how clever, or where I can take the story. Yeah, that's interesting.
Even like pitching shows, I remember for a long time you could only pitch premise-based shows at a lot of theaters because what's the hook? What are you taking this idea from? Right? And so that seemed to be like organic was rarer for a while. If I'm so sorry, if I just open my balcony door, the dog will stop being a menace to
Do whatever you
society.
want.
Let me give me one tiny second.
You're fine. But that is an interesting point talking about. I can see how premise shows almost are more marketable because, yeah, they have that hook. I never even thought about that,
Oh, for sure. I mean,
which totally makes sense.
Liam's show, right? Pinot Noir is a hit at UCB.
Well, how do you advertise an organic show? How do you make that sexy?
I guess at this point, we'll ask Monica, but I would imagine, depending on where you're at, it would be who's in the show. I would imagine, like,
Oh, interesting. That's a whole
you
nother.
know, like if it's like, oh, if it's these players, well, I'll watch Jim Woods and Monica do organic anything, or if you're a little more unknown, it might behoove you to have that hook. So it's like, you don't know us, but the idea is cool, you know?
Yeah. Monica, can we create an organic, how do we make organic sexy? How do we make it like that? It has a hook, you know, premise kind of inherently has a hook to it. How do we give organic the hook that gets people to buy into it or come to the shows?
Right. I mean, I'm concerned about improv becoming sexy, but they're not going to laugh the same. I hear you, because it is like, I think it's the truest form of improv. I love premise-based. I love doing heralds. I'm not taking away any, but like, it's improv based off of something versus the truest form of improv is Sam walks on stage, itches his shoulder because it itches, and I let that be part of the show now. Like, right? Like, just that innate nuanced behavior that happens between these two people in this moment in time. And it's not really selling it, but.
Well, yeah, really. That's a lot of words to put on a poster, right?
Yeah.
But nuances. I mean, but I think that's what we thought the selling point was going to be since the beginning of all this, was like, we make up stuff on the spot before your very eyes, only listening and reacting to each other. And like, that's in itself can just be organic there. And then maybe the quality didn't stick, you know, for whatever people want to say about UCB. And I don't know, I have no idea what they're doing now or their training centers, but like, it was nice to have a formula for funny. It was nice to see that the product was going to be, there's going to be a higher quality product. For the most part, you know, we knew the laughs were going to be there, because listen, like Monica said, I've trained everywhere as well. Some of those other organic shows back in the day were a little rough, just two people kind of like moving a chair and then someone else moves the chair. And I wonder if it's taken Monica, I'm just making this up now, all of our training, all of our experience, we have game, we have premise, we have all these tools now that are organic, almost as a little, I don't know if there's a pop to it now or something is a little different, because I would feel very comfortable spending time in an organic space. I don't even know what I'm trying to say, but there was a time where I felt like, no, I needed a premise because otherwise this is going to be hard to watch. I don't know.
I think I wonder if it's also the audiences didn't know improv the way we know it now. We didn't have all those shows on Netflix and all that stuff. So like, it was palatable to go, oh, this idea that Jamie's playing is from what she just said. Oh my God, right? So we could see you connect the dots. So it felt easier for the audience to go, I see what they're doing. Mm. Versus you get a word and you just go. When I was doing the solo show, I did it at stand-up establishments a little bit, because again, it's very hard to put up a solo show. So I was like, where can I get stage time? And man, did those audience not understand me. Wow. They did not understand when I did, because I did it organic and now I don't do it organic anymore. I do like a conversation living room opening. When I did it organic, I could see the audience just being like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Even if it was funny, but like, because the audience had never seen improv before. I just wonder if that's part of it. Now that they're in the know, is it easier for us?
That's certainly got to be a part of it. Just quickly, because I'm trying to be more brave in general. What's popping up for you in a moment like that, Monica, where you're doing organic solo work in front of an audience who just isn't grabbing it, isn't picking it up? What's going on inside? Are you comfortable and cool and you're just here for it? Or do you have those little sparks of freak out and stuff like that?
I have like a memory of doing it. I won't say where, but it was like Asif Ali was there because he's very talented. He took improv, but like, obviously everyone knows him, stand up. I'm trying to think who else was there. Like, there were quite a few people that I like think are hilarious and super talented. And I'm like near the end of the lineup, very grateful for that. And then it was just the audience didn't get it. They didn't understand why I'm not talking to them. The stage was also much smaller. They weren't following it. Yeah, inside felt terrible. My insides. It really, you know what I mean? Because you're in it and no one can save me but me. So yeah, that's also like this fear and challenge. All of it is you bomb a lot. That's why I'm like, I don't know what show Sam saw, but like I had to bomb a lot.
Yeah.
To kind of find it. Or bomb after 10 minutes because I would get tired or realize what I'm not able to do yet and I need to keep focusing on. Even the tag runs, I've been doing those lately. That's a new muscle because I have to let the audience in on it, but still do it in a funny way.
Yeah. What's the ideal duration for a solo show? Like, you probably fit yourself into like normal improv slots, so like 25 minutes or so. But like, if you could choose, like, how long would your solo show be if you could have any duration?
I did 30 minutes recently. That was the longest I've done. That was long. I think the 20 to 25 is great for the bigger piece of like the idea of making it like this sort of artsy thing of like, here's for you, super funny show, and then here's what my brain wants. I feel like that has to be longer because I need two separate segments and also make sure my audience is happy with the first half. So if I'm not with as funny in the second, they understand it's the art of it versus because I'm not doing it for the funny like the first half. So I like a good 20, 25 right now because I think I get to live in it. It's not too much for the audience. It's enjoyable, so, I hope.
Oh, sorry. What you're saying is so interesting to me. Having, you know, you want to make sure that the first part is funny. I almost would be curious just to let it be whatever it is, because what if the second part is funnier because you're playing to you? Like, I wonder, I mean, I don't know. This is your show, but I'm just curious. Yeah, it's like, yeah. What if us playing to an audience actually hurts the show sometimes? I don't know.
I hear you, but it's like we all follow the laughs, right? And like, as much as I try to empathize, and you did ask what I do before the show, I remember seeing the TJ and Dave documentary or whatever it would be called years ago, and like how, like what they do with their days. The day of a show, I am reading everything possible. I am opening, I am making sure that my world is not just my small world, right? So I have a ton of references and information. I do like to make sure my brain is as stuffed as possible. So I don't know. There's like, it's still what's funny to me or what, like, what if that day I'm in more of a like mood for like somber, then that second half won't be funny because I want to maybe be dramatic for a couple minutes and enjoy the drama of improv.
So interesting you said that. Nick Gillette's been on the podcast. I just saw a solo show and was talking to him about it. And he goes through a very similar sort of thing where he wants the first couple of things he tells stories. The first couple are lighter, right? Warm up the audience a little bit. And then he will sort of go to a darker, more dramatic, maybe, you know, it was just Halloween. So like trying to get like horror, right? How do you scare an audience? And he didn't necessarily want to start with that. But it is so interesting to think of the journey you're taking the audience on, because even in sort of why you're doing it, there's this tension of like, am I doing it for me or am I doing it for them? And that's, I would think that's challenging. I've been working on a one person show. I might get to perform it soon. And there's part of me when I'm practicing and I'm just like, this is so indulgent. Like, this is just me on stage by myself. And I hope that someone watching this is going to get something out of it, because there's a challenge there for me, at least, to unravel.
I mean, it's also like, I do think it's fun. I think it's cool for audience to see like what we're, cause you see two person teams do multiple characters. Right. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we don't, there's so many other things we can do with improv. There's places we can reach and like take chances. So I don't know. I really, really enjoy it. I hope it's not as self-indulgent as we're pulling it apart. Maybe what am I doing, guys?
Let's just sit here and ask ourselves that question.
I know, God damn it. I thought, like, I do know there's ego, but I also feel like I really just enjoy pulling apart, like, what can one human do with all of this?
I also just kind of love like the ethos of improv is make your partner look great. But when you're doing it by yourself and you call yourself out for, you know, football or speaking Spanish or whatever, that you're, it's like, no, actually I'm going to make myself look terrible in front of you, which is kind of a fun inversion there. And anyways, I'm sure it's fun for audiences.
Well, speaking of the audience, if they're coming in to see a solo improv show, there's a different expectation, right? I think immediately there's just like a fun wow factor. Like, this is cool no matter what. I think that's, in my opinion, at least, like there's a base level of like, oh, this is, I feel like would have more of a chance of failing. I know that walking in is at least my thoughts. And I wonder if there is grace given by an audience who's going to see your show, Monica, not when you're plugged into a stand-up show or just sandwiching between it. Two other improv teams, if there is some of that, like just the kind of a wow factor at the top or through the whole piece, right? Of like, oh, this is interesting no matter what. Do you feel a sense that they're on your side? If, I guess, of course, if they're coming to your show, of course they're on your side. Right.
I do. I think it's a loving community audience. I also think it helps that I now do a premise-based show because I connect them into already a little bit of information so they see it come to life. I think that does help make the show more palatable. And then I have gotten, like, when I've had friends who've seen it a bunch and I'm like, what do you think? The thing I've been told sometimes is that people will hold their breath from laughing because I'll go to the next thing so fast versus, like, on stage, we edit, we sweep edit, we let the audience breathe out, we let them breathe in, and then we give it to them again. And with this, I don't do that. So it is kind of also learning what structures in improv probably work for a reason. Like, editing is helping a show. You think of a sketch show, you have blackouts for a reason to keep the pacing up, right? So it is like noticing, like taking all these, like what works in all these different comedic styles and how can I help that work for me? So getting that note from the audience of like, give me a moment has helped because I was just going so quickly.
Sure, of course. I love that. I really can't get past the idea of the headphone idea. I just love that. I just love that because, Monica, I have such a complicated relationship with comedy. And, you know, every other day I switch between like, do I care about them and it being funny? And come on, they're here for a good time. And I know we've all had that. It's not an original thought, but that one just seems funny or not. I'm in for like straight up artistic expression, which I'm in for. And maybe a couple off the street who's here to see the comedy might not love that or something, but for me, and like an, I don't know, I just fucking love it. I just love that. Really, it's really like I said, the word sparking me right now. I just think that is so cool. And I get a little afraid, but I totally understand you. And plus you're a professional and you know your show, of the idea of having to give some for them and then some for you. Cause I feel like, cause part of me, Monica, wants to say, fuck them. You know what I mean? Just do you. But you're nice and you're a good person. And obviously they're there to be entertained. And I understand that as well. But I think it would be entertaining to see somebody on stage with headphones not here. That's
right.
Fucking great.
I will say, I host a show called Form Night at UCB. And we do a different form each month. And I get different guests. And like, I thought this would be the epitome of fun doing this show. Because I'm like, I get to do a new one with new people. And instead, it is still a little bit of work. And like the last show was with like Ithamar Enriquez, Alex Verney, Betsy Stover, like super talented people. And we got off stage and we're kind of like, whoo, because the form was hard.
Yeah.
It wasn't as funny for the audience versus the next show I did was just organic and we went chaotic and it was much funnier. And ego-wise, I looked better. Because it wasn't restricted. So then I feel what you're saying of like, do I want to do it for me being my best? Because my funniest isn't going to be trapped in a specific form, but there's something artistic and cool about showing people all these new forms. I feel you, because I feel like sometimes I'm like, that's not my best funny.
It's complicated, for sure.
It is. It's super complicated. Sure. Of like, who is this for? Is it the challenge of the moment? Is it the flow? Is it them?
That's my question I wake up with every morning, which is, who is this for? That's exactly right.
But I'm kind of curious though, when you're taping your own rehearsals, right? You sort of mentioned you might set up a video for that. Like, I've found improvising without an audience in front of a video camera very challenging, right? Because there's a deafening silence, right? And then there's no coach or anyone else. Like, you kind of really do have a vacuum there. Is there a difference you see there as opposed to when you're on stage? I mean, of course there is, because like audience gives us energy, but I'm just kind of curious what that process is like when you're just in front of a camera and you're like, it's just me and I have no idea how this is going to go until I get out of this.
I haven't, I don't know, like I'll watch my playback of a show and see what I did and when I followed or when I lost the audience, right? I will watch, I feel like those I learn more from because it's in front of the audience. Mm-hmm. Sometimes doing it at home is also just getting the reps and the comfort in. Because again, this isn't a show I have a weekly opportunity to put up. So like I did a festival last in September with it, and I don't know when I'm doing it next, hopefully soon. So I think because of that like the practice is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was very helpful when I first started to note myself, and now that it's been an amount of time with it, I think it works better to watch the shows on stage and note those.
It's interesting because you even talk about watching and noting almost the audience more than like yourself. You're sort of like, that's an interesting perspective to view that back with, which is like, where's the audience at this point? Are they with me? Have I lost them? That's interesting.
Well, just like premise works better for the audience because
Yeah.
I get laughs just referencing what I started with. And they also feel like they see what I built versus when I start from scratch. Sometimes there's still that idea of like, did you make that up? You know, like you're just going anywhere. So I feel like, yeah, I don't know. I changed it for the audience. That definitely helped the audience.
Premise works better for the audience. Interesting. Because I would like to, but I'm not the audience. I just want to watch you walk up there and just go, just start with a sound and then just go. Do you know what I mean?
Like
But
no word at all, just
I mean,
like,
yeah, just go. Just, yeah,
yeah.
exactly. And just start to find wherever you're going to go, which of course you could do, but I hear you. You're also, you want people to see this show. I guess what I'm asking for is, could you do a silent show just for me and nobody?
Mean, you know, I want to do all those, like, they're super fun to do and take risks and everything. It's just that also there's that aspect of failure of like, well, this won't be my funniest. So I hope this n audience recognizes this is specifically hard in this way. Like even when people see my solo show, that's all you see. I'm like, you only see one style of what I can do. You know, it is, I don't know
Unplugged,
what form works best.
yeah. It's like your unplugged show, right? Where it's like it's still kind of your music, but it's not the album everyone bought, right? It's a different version.
Yeah, like when you guys are talking about different forms, like I heard your three-person form thing. I'm like, I feel like as a performer or as an artist, I need a bunch of different forms so that I can have my two-person, I can have my solo, I can have my group of strangers that I've never met or a team that I've worked with. Like that way I can get out all the different versions of me on stage I don't get to have. Same with premise and organic. I need both.
I love that. I love that. I think that's really nice. Yeah.
One thing, this comes up a lot in our clown class. Chris can attest to this. We talk about it a lot. But is how do how do you get yourself to let go of control? Like when you do solo work, it seems like you can set your other character up for, being a football aficionado, even though maybe you don't know much about football or whatever it is. But even that, you can set yourself up, but even then you kind of know, have an idea like, oh, I know still how well I might or might not do with this. Is there, how do you, I don't know what my question is. How do you really push yourself into an area where you don't know anything? Like you're totally, that area that we were talking about where you said Chad shows, where like you push yourself to like just the limits of the unknown. How do you ever find yourself getting there? Or, and if so, how do you get there? Does
I
that make
think
any
that,
sense?
yeah, I don't know if it's the pimping myself on stage has helped because I feel like it forced me to get better at this because I'm like, oh, here comes Irish Sally, and now I gotta like walk in and like Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, and have like an eye, and like I'm like, fuck, you know what I mean? So like, I think that has helped stretch me, and it's scary. Or even like, I did a show where I had to reference board games, and I'm like, I didn't play a lot of board games growing up. I love them. I just, but like, right? So then I got stuck on what else to say. And I tagged myself to comment on being stuck as an actor. Do you know what I mean? So, like, then finding the joy in that way, because the audience has seen my brain, is expecting that list. So let's comment on it together and then see where that goes. So I feel like stuff like that has helped add that aspect of like, when I'm in a crunch, really commit to it. And maybe include the minutes, so then it's a moment in time we're all experiencing. I don't
That's
know.
interesting. I mean, is because normally when I think of, commenting on a failure, that's I think where the meta stuff comes in. Is usually when you go meta, it's usually because, the substantive thing didn't work. And so you kind of step out of it to comment on how the substantive thing didn't work. Do you find yourself going that route, or do you really I don't know any more board games. And so I'm just going to start making noises. I don't feel like I have so many questions, but I can't articulate them. Does that make sense though?
Totally. I did do this. This is so dumb. And I've never thought of this until this moment. I did a show where I think I made like shit, fruit punch, something just dumb and stupid. And the audience didn't go for it. And I just went too bad. And I like went behind the bar and made fish like shit shot clap. Like I just remember I was like, I think it's funny. So I kept doing it. So there was that moment of like, oh yeah, I'm going to follow this and you'll end up on this track with me. And because I was having such a good time, like it made me break. I think that also helped. I don't know, right? Like it is, how do you keep finding it or opening up these new neuro pathways on stage, essentially?
Yeah, exactly.
That moment specifically is like, I've spent so much time there where the audience is not giving it to me. And then there's all these mathematics are going through my mind. And then this other voice, it's like, well, you enjoy this. But it's like, well, are we here for me to make more shit shots? Or do we, you know, should we move on because they want something else? Also, fuck them because I don't care about them. But also, I do love them and I need them here. Also, I want to be funny for me, but also I want to be funny for them. But also, I want to be all the time. And I feel like certain performers spend more time in that zone than others. I used to bring up Jamie Moyer a lot on this podcast. I haven't mentioned her name in a minute. I don't think Jamie Moyer spends a lot of time there. I think Jamie Moyer makes a shit shot and they go nuts. And that's a whole different conversation, I think. But there's something interesting there of like, I don't really see her having to second guess her choices often. And I mean that with all due respect. And I'm one of her biggest fans. It's interesting because I've spent time there, Monica. And then like, because sometimes I've served them shit shots in spite of themselves. Like, right. Fuck you then. But that's also, I don't love myself. I don't love that place. And I used to spend a lot of time there in that kind of anger zone, which I don't think you have. But like, all right, then this whole show now is just going to be shit shots, everybody. And good night. Obviously, I don't do that as much anymore. But that's an interesting zone to be in, Monica. I like that you talked about that little thing. I think in its purest sense, you following what brings you joy or makes you laugh is a nice place to be. And that means making more, and hopefully they come back, and they probably will, because if you're genuinely enjoying that moment, where I would be like, now time to punish you.
Right.
I don't know what I'm saying.
I mean, I played with Jamie on Smokehouse for a few years. And I feel like her version of it would be like, if I said I made you pizza, she's like, why would you make me pizza on a Tuesday, right? Like she'll take my idea and go a direction with it. And that's her saying, let's the fuck it. But then we do it together. Do you know what I mean?
I see.
Because I do feel like she makes very bold choices or bold ands. But then we immediately go with her. Versus we're getting in our heads about not even our anding, but almost our own like first thought, right? I don't know.
I know. Anyway, this is going to a crazy place. Sorry, and now my dog. We've all had dog stuff today. That's fun.
Right. My dog was silent and disruptive.
Mine's
vocal. Yeah.
Please.
I just had it. Now I can't form my question. We were just talking about
rough.
Wow.
You mentioned like the group game funkiness, right? A little bit. And even, you know, how much of the blocking have you worked on? Because like there are a couple different ways that people try to do the like multiple character. I've seen the spin move, I've seen the step. And it's always like feels a little clunky to me. I don't know. I'm just kind of curious, like as you were developing stuff, like did you really work on blocking at one point in time, or did you work on like the world creation or like agreeing with yourself or anything? Have you deep diven into anything specifically that you've needed to kind of help with your solo show?
I mean, I almost only play characters on stage. I don't really play myself, so. I feel, and I love object work just as a performer normally. So when I first started filming myself, I was giving myself notes of like, the transition out character, run across stage in character. A lot of my notes were the physical because I wouldn't, this one would bleed into that one, right? So not really blocking, but more this line is done, that character dies for a moment, and now this one lives because it's who I'm jumping in the skin of. So do you feel like that took a sec? I do move around the stage a lot. Because I do play normally like eight characters, so I like, or I think I did nine in the last show, so I do like to have them have a different spot, but I want them to move. So I also set up the stage. If there's a table, that table lives for everybody. But I find object work is helpful because it almost makes it easier, right? Instead of we're all just floating in the pool, there's certain obstacles so we can all interact with them differently, and that I find helpful if I'm trying to embody somebody. I don't know. Do you have trouble or do you find blocking the opposite or do you like it?
I find it, I think you're right. I think the bleeding between the two is challenging. And then I also find that I get stuck in sort of like a stepping one step between each characters. And I have to remember that, like, no, that character could walk across the stage to the other side, right? I don't have to be in 11s by myself, which is a weird place to find yourself in. But you do sometimes. But even what you were just sort of saying about saying yes to yourself, it kind of struck me as like, oh yeah, I wonder if I'm anding myself too much and I need to just like agree and invest more in like fewer ideas and just sort of, I don't know, keeping it simple so that I can keep track of it. 'Cause when you start like spewing words like I am now, you just go out into like craziness, right?
I hear what you're
I
saying.
do. Monica,
Although they're all laughing.
respond to that.
I know what you're saying. Yes. No, the bleeding took a while to get through to like really, and I'm still work. I feel like I'm still. It's. I've been doing this maybe 6 years, and I think it keeps getting better, right? Because I'm figuring it out more, and the more audiences I get to see it, the more I can fine tune. Like doing it to foreign audience is different because I wanted to see what do they notice, what do they enjoy, like right, like just non people who know me audience is helpful because right, like what works or what doesn't work. But yeah, I think super clear character choices and then games, just multiple games makes it way easier. Which you do in like two, in scenes anyways, you rest a game with a game, so it's sort of like that thought process, but then with a narrative structure.
I couldn't imagine doing nine characters on stage. I only have three characters, Monica. It's this one, and this one. Those are my three
So you only
characters.
have two likable characters,
Thank you so much for being here. It's funny, as you could tell, because I could tell every time Sam would ask a question, it would be back to solo work. And when I asked a question, it was more like, I don't know. It's funny. We haven't spent a ton of time together, Monica, but I feel connected to you because I feel like we're in the same kind of generation. I don't know why. Do you know what I mean by that?
really.
Like,
Oh, totally. I've seen you around for years. I remember the first time I played with you, I was like, Chris, we're playing together. This feels crazy.
So thank you for like just going, just I don't know, for this conversation. Obviously, your thoughts on the solo stuff was really fun, but I appreciated just kind of hearing how your brain is working and where your heart's at with this stuff. And I love what you said earlier about the solo satisfies this and the duo that and the trio that one. And that's really beautiful. I love that idea. So thank you for that.
Thanks for having me. I listened, like I binged a bunch of your episodes.
Oh, good.
So it was fun to hear. It's like a, I think I can imagine audiences like it because they get to hear different people's perspectives, but also like you three have a different perspective. I like that you weren't all on the same page sometimes. So it's like, oh yeah, this is how I relate to this person in this moment, and then I relate to that person for that reason, and you pull it apart. So I'm sure this is fun if you're doing a good thing for the community.
I feel like it's like going to be a resource, like some kind of thing that just sits there for years and years. And some improv student in 2042 is like, look at this whole thing, dust it off and listen to me yell at Sam.
I mean, we might be pushing improv into new directions. I don't know that there's another episode of an improv podcast about solo shows. So this might be the first. We might be innovating here.
Maybe. I feel like it's not talked about often. So I'm like, yeah.
It's not. Also, so I know we're just wrapping up, but I see a whole world. I mean, obviously you're doing a lot of things, Monica, but like you doing these shows, touring these, you were just in Berlin recently. Is that right?
Yeah.
Like doing this, I could also then imagine like you teaching a bunch of these workshops and classes. Like you're kind of out there forging a path for a lot of people that might love this work, especially with the explosion of the clown work. What a beautiful marrying of, you know, the improv tools that a lot of this community has with some of their new clown stuff. It just seems like a really fun combination there.
Well, thank you, gents. It's very nice of you to say.